MechCast, Thursday, August 2nd, 2012. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Well, today is going to be our, what should we call this? Mountain Lion Palooza. And I'll tell you right up front now, I keep wanting to call Mountain Lion Snow Leopard, which is, that's moving backwards. That's the wrong direction. No, we're moving forward with our big cats and we're moving from lion to mountain lion. But there's very good odds that at some point in this episode, I'm going to call it Snow Leopard. So just be aware of that up front. That seems to be going on. But I've been trying to dive in as much as I can. You know, I've got things happening. So I haven't got a ton of face time with Mountain Lion. See, I almost did it there again. Got it installed on my MacBook Air. I have not installed it onto my primary machine yet, and we're going to get into the reasons why in this episode, but I'm going to go through everything that you're going to want to do to prepare for Mountain Lion. If you've already installed it, I'm going to cover some of the new features, some tips and tricks, maybe uncover some things that you haven't discovered about it yet. So we're just going to get into all of that. We also have a little bit of recent news to get into, but mostly this show is going to be all about Mountain Lion. A lot of you have been asking me to cover that, and so we're going to get into it. And I'm sure this is going to kick off a conversation in our community. You probably have some great tips and tricks that you found. Please share those with us so that we can discover all the cool new things that are in Mountain Lion. And, you know, Apple's magic number, 200 new features, or over 200 new features in all these operating system updates. And while, to me, Mountain Lion doesn't feel like a huge jump, it's only been a year, there's a lot of nice polish and stuff in there, it seems like. And overall, upgrades seem to be going pretty well. So we're going to dive into that. But before we get started, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show's sponsors, and that's Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You know, what's awesome about Notebook is you can do so many things with it. And the big thing that I find myself using it a lot for is just handling the task of collecting, organizing, writing, and reviewing information. It's just a place where you can gather a bunch of research, and it handles it all so beautifully. And one feature that I'm going to focus on that's in there that I think really helps a lot is what's called the clipping service. And you can create clipping services for pages in your notebook. You can actually create multiple clipping services if you want to organize different types of clips or information into certain sections within your notebook. But essentially, the way they work is you add a clipping service to a section or a page, rather, and then you can, in any application where you can select text, you can pretty much clip that into your notebook without leaving the app that you're working in. So that could be Mail, or that could be Safari or Chrome or wherever it might be. And the reason that that works is it all works through OS X services. And you select the text that you want, you right-click on it, or you go up to the services menu and you choose Clip to My Notebook. And it sends it right to that page. And that alone is powerful, right? You don't have to leave the app. You can gather all these clippings from all over the place and then come back to your notebook. So that's that collecting part. Come back to your notebook and then start organizing it and start annotating it, moving things around, adding information to it, adding in maybe images by dragging them in, doing all sorts of things, right, to get that stuff organized. And then you can later review it. And in the review process, what's awesome about clippings is they put little snapbacks. So they have stickers that go in the margins, what Notebook calls stickers, puts them in the margins, and you can right-click on those and get more information or snapbacks. So if you, for example, clipped something from an email, it will let you jump right back to that original message. So that's great because you can clip in the relevant parts of an email that you want in your notebook. You don't have to bring the whole email in. But if you ever need to get back to it for reference, how many times have you tried to go find some old email that you were working on a project with someone and you want to go back and look at something. How often do we have the situation where we just can't find that thing? If you've clipped part of it into your notebook for your project, you can just snap right back to it. You can even reply or initiate the reply to the sender of that email right from the clipping inside notebook. It's just really awesome. And that's just one of like dozens of really powerful features that are in this application. They also have an iOS version, and you can sync your documents over so you can take them on the go, and it has Dropbox support, so that makes the whole thing really easy. Just an awesome application. If you haven't checked it out, you should head to the website. They have a free trial available, circusponies.com, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. Let's kick it off with a couple little news items. Well, I guess not so little. The first one we're going to kick off with is pretty big. iMore broke the story this week that the next big Apple event, the one for the iPhone 5 and maybe some other cool stuff, is going to be happening on September 12th. And that's pretty much been all but confirmed. All of the major sources that we normally get this information from that tend to be credible have sort of confirmed that September 12th date. So places like the Wall Street Journal, The Loop, iLounge, all saying, yep, what iMore broke, that's true. iMore has two of their sources, they said, citing that date as the date for the next event. And of course, the iPhone 5 is expected to be announced. We know a little bit about that device just from what has been being leaked and some of the images and stuff that are surfacing online. Almost everybody's in agreement that the iPhone will be at that event and then potentially going on sale that week or within weeks of that announcement date. So that's a little bit earlier than we originally expected. I was kind of thinking October would be the time frame. So Apple, I don't think they're rushing it out. I think they're just getting it out with a little more lead time moving into the holidays and things like that. So that should be good for sales. It also should be good for, that's right at the end of their quarter, so they'll be able to get some numbers, some good numbers in for their next quarterly results call. And that's a good thing because even though they did well with the last call, they didn't meet analyst expectations. And that was a little bit of a buzzkill for that earnings call. So I think they want to not repeat that situation. There's also some speculation that we're going to get that rumored mini iPad, the 7.85-inch iPad at that event. Although, with that rumor, they're saying it likely won't be going on sale till a little bit later, probably more in the October timeframe. And there's also some speculation that there could be a new iPod Nano, or excuse me, iPod Touch announced at that event. Also, there's an off chance that there could be a new Nano. So if all of that stuff is packed into that event, that is a ton of stuff for Apple to cover. Although, if you look at the past history of the events they've been doing, that's not out of the ordinary. They've been cramming this stuff into these big, massive events. Hour and a half is not untypical or not atypical for them to go into. So I was talking a little bit about this with Ken Ray on a recent macOS Ken show. He thought they might divide it up and split it into two events. There are some people thinking that maybe we'll get a September event and then immediately following an October event, which Apple has done in the past. So that could happen as well. They might break it up, do the iPhone, and then do the iPad mini. I don't know where the iPods would fall in within each one of those events. In terms of the iPhone itself, the biggest new rumor we're hearing about, we know about the 4-inch display, taller form factor. We know that they're going to use the in-plane touch technology. The biggest new rumor, we knew that Apple was going to go with a smaller, speculation, I guess I should say, is that they're going to go with a smaller dock connector. A lot of the rumors had been that it was a 19-pin dock connector. We're now hearing it might be even smaller than that. It might be a 9-pin connector and probably using a magnetic-style MagSafe-like technology for actually clicking into that connector. So that's kind of the new rumor around the iPhone. And that same connector would be used also on a new iPad if that were to come out. And then there's sort of this outside rumor that there may be an update to the current iPad, the new iPad, and it might get a new screen on it, something using the Sharp Exo technology, which would allow it to be thinner, use a little bit less power, run cooler, get better battery life, all those things. So great display for Apple to throw into the product. There had been some rumors that the current version would have had the Exo displays, but I think there were some yield problems, maybe some production concerns, and we didn't end up seeing that display. Will Apple throw that in sort of midstream? I think they're going to stick on the yearly cycle, so I really don't put a lot of stock in that rumor. I do think we're going to get the iPhone in September, possibly the new mini iPad. And on the iPod Touch side, I think we mentioned it would end up with the same screen as the new iPhone. So that's that 1136 by 640, 3.99 inch screen. So that's the latest rumors on that. September 12th, stay tuned, and we'll be covering everything and anything that Apple brings out on that date. So mark your calendars, even though it's a rumor, it's a pretty strong one at this point. The other thing to talk about, like I said, this is Mountain Lion Palooza episode. Mountain Lion has done extremely well for Apple. They're saying it's broken their download records. I don't know if it's the way Apple's pushing the update in terms of their marketing, in terms of telling people, hey, you got to upgrade. They're pushing it pretty hard. You feel a little bit of the pressure to upgrade. I kind of do. And also, maybe the fact that it's going through the Mac App Store, making it easier to download. I think also just there's more people out there that have Macs. Apple has sold more Macs to more people. Their market share numbers have gone up. So it would make sense that when they release a new version of the operating system, that they're going to have a little bit higher numbers. I think both those things are playing a factor in the success of Mountain Lion. But Apple says they've had over 3 million downloads in the first 4 days that it went on sale, and that would make it the most successful OS launch in Apple's history. I'm sure the price tag has helped out a lot, $19.99 US for the update. It makes it very affordable. It causes very little hesitation when you ask people, are you going to upgrade? Oh, it's $19. Yeah, I'll go ahead and upgrade as long as my machine supports it. And we know every machine out there isn't supported, but most of the newer Macs and everything since about 2008 on, depending upon what kind of graphics card you have. But I did notice that Apple is using a download number, 3 million downloads, and not a sales number when they're talking about the success. So we know with apps sold through the Mac App Store, you can put it on multiple machines. I'm sure if you're like me, you're putting it on 2, 3, 4. You think you can do up to 5 machines in a household. So, and most people are re-downloading it. They're not making a USB stick, or they're not saving out the installer. They're just going through the Mac App Store, which means a re-download. So you could have 5 downloads for the same customer. So I think that's also helping pump the numbers up a little bit, but Apple marketing's not going to admit to that one. 3 million downloads in 4 days just sounds amazing. And I think I was also reading a report that there was some recent analytics data from Chitika, and they monitor web traffic and they look at browsers, and they can tell in what operating system that you're running. And according to their numbers, not long after Apple released Mountain Lion, they saw a jump up to about 5% of the traffic that they were seeing on their client's servers coming from machines running Mountain Lion. So there was a pretty good initial uptake in the days just following the release of 10.8. And I would say overall, Apple's server farms did incredibly well at keeping up with the demand. I did not have any issues making my purchase or downloading. I didn't hear about anybody having issues with that sort of thing, which we have had during past launches. You know, Apple's servers get slammed on the first day and kind of can't keep up with the load. But seems like this time they had more downloads than they ever have had before, and everything went along pretty smoothly. I say that in terms of downloading the application, it didn't go so smoothly for everyone in terms of the upgrade. There were some customers who qualified for the up-to-date program. Those would be customers who purchased a new Mac within the window to get a free update to Mountain Lion from Lion. They received their codes. That all went very well. But some of those codes ended up being for Mountain Lion server, which is an actual upgrade to the Mountain Lion client. So they didn't end up with being able to install Mountain Lion, which I'm sure was very frustrating. Apple worked pretty quickly to get the situation remedied, although I think I did read one report that said some of the replacement codes still had the same issue. But they were able to get it resolved after a little while, but didn't make for a happy day for some of the customers. But overall, I would say it was a very successful launch, both in terms of just volume of downloads and the overall experience that people had on launch day. So those are the two little news items I have for you. Let's dive into Mountain Lion, how to upgrade, what I'm going to do for my upgrades, and some of the new features and stuff like that. Before we get into that, though, I want to thank another one of my show sponsors, and this is a new sponsor to the MacCast, Vimov. They make an incredible weather application for your iOS devices. They released Weather HD 2, and the very first thing, if you get this application, that you're going to notice is just how beautiful it is. And you know me, I'm a sucker for just gorgeous interfaces and really beautiful applications that display information in a simple but very understandable and very informative fashion. And that's kind of what you want with a weather app, right? You want to get right to the pertinent details. You don't want a lot of clutter, but you want a lot of options, and you want it to look nice and be easy to navigate. And I would say they've pulled it off with Weather HD 2. They have this really cool quick view that offers you the ability, if you've set up multiple cities, you can get all the multiple city views in one nice graphic, and it's sort of this seamless flowing grass. They've got these incredible animations, just gorgeous for the different types of weather. You can flip through the different cities to get a view of each individual city. You, of course, have the forecast. You can get it by day of the week. You can also get it hourly. You can customize all that kind of stuff. They also have awesome satellite maps, 3D. You know, you pull up a 3D globe and you can pinch and zoom in, and you can get the heat patterns and rain forecasts and all that sort of stuff. All the great stuff you'd expect from a weather application, just presented in a gorgeous, gorgeous display. And it looks beautiful on the iPad 3, also on your iPhone, your iPod Touch. They have a light version that's free, but the full version is just 99 cents. So I would say just grab that. It's a no-brainer. When you see the screenshots, you're going to want this application. So go take a look. Weather HD 2 from Vimov. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So let's talk about upgrading to Lion. What's the procedure? What should you do? Where do we start? The place we start is preparing. You want to get your machine ready. Maybe you've done this already, but if you're like me, you've been kind of holding off, waiting to see what's going on with Mountain Lion, making sure people aren't running into any big issues, at least on those critical machines that you rely on for your day-to-day work. So as much as it feels often like, I want to install right away, I want to see what's going on with Mountain Lion, depending upon your situation, it may be beneficial to just hold off, wait a week or two, see what's going on, make sure everything's running without a hitch. If you can, like I said, install onto a secondary or a non-critical machine. A lot of us have multiple Macs. Pick one that you're not going to be using on a daily basis, maybe your family machine versus your work machine, something you can play around with and maybe risk a little bit. Although with this one, I don't think you're going to find that there's not a lot of risk, at least from all the reports that I've been reading and my personal experience installing it on the MacBook Air. Definitely verify your specifications. As I was mentioning earlier, generally, just as a general rule, you need a 2008 or newer Mac, and you need one that has a discrete graphics processor. So if you have the Intel integrated graphics only that are sharing your system memory, your machine very likely won't qualify to run Mountain Lion. Apple actually has a list on their website, so you can go check out the official list. But like I was saying, in general, 2008 or newer Mac, Intel Core 2 Duo, and a discrete GPU, and you should be pretty good to go. As far as RAM goes, Apple's saying you only need 2 gigabytes. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's probably not enough. Running Mountain Lion on 2 gigs is going to be a little tight. More RAM is always better. I would say 4 gigabytes is a pretty good minimum, but if you have one of the machines that'll run it, most of those in that time frame, Apple was shipping with 4 gigs of RAM, I think, at least stuff from about 2010 on, 2009 maybe even. So do that. If you need additional RAM, now might be a good time to upgrade. Prices are very affordable. Check out OWC at maxsales.com or Crucial at crucial.com, two of my favorite places for buying memory. It's pretty easy to install this stuff, so even if you're not technical, undoing a couple screws on the bottom of your MacBook Pro and just popping in those memory modules is a pretty quick, easy upgrade. And you're really going to improve your performance. Jumping from, say, 2 gigabytes to 8 gigabytes, you're going to see a nice little bump in performance just by doing that. So that is something you should consider. If you're doing an over-the-top install, make sure that you have some free space on your hard drive. You don't want to have it all jammed up. You don't want it to be almost completely full. The installer, just downloading it, is going to take up about 5 gigs. So I would say you want to have a nice buffer zone on that. Probably 5% of your drive being available free space would be good. You may not need that much, maybe just double or triple the amount of the installer. So let's call it 15 gigabytes, but you don't want it to be totally full. So check that out before you start running the installer or making the purchase and downloading it. The other thing you're going to want to do is check your applications. Make sure that they are Mountain Lion compatible. And also check drivers. Don't forget all the little things like menu bar items and preference panes and plugins. A great resource for verifying that your applications are up to date is roaringapps.com. They have a database of just about every Mac application that's out there. And they have the ability for people to submit whether it's working with Mountain Lion, whether it's not working with Mountain Lion. And if it's not working, what the issues are, how severe are they? Are they minor issues that you can work around, or is it a complete showstopper? It's just going to crash every time you launch it. So check that out, especially for your critical applications. If you have a few applications that, hey, if it stopped running, I don't really care. Yeah, you don't have to worry about those. But the critical ones you rely on day to day, make sure that they are going to be compatible. And if they are, I would really recommend that you upgrade your applications and your operating system and everything first. Get everything completely as far up to date on your current operating system as you can before you do the upgrade. Again, this is if you're going to just do the straight, I'm going to run the updater, install it right over top of what I have. If you're planning on reinstalling your applications, obviously not as critical because you're going to reinstall the apps and then upgrade them after the fact. And as I was saying, don't forget those drivers and firmware updates. If you haven't run firmware updates on your Mac, make sure you've run those system preferences, menu bar items. Another one that often gets forgotten about is plugins and add-ons to other applications. So while the application itself might be Mountain Lion compatible, the critical plugin that you rely on in Photoshop or Lightroom or Aperture or Final Cut, I think Final Cut still has plugins, right? That might not be working. And nothing is worse than doing the upgrade, installing the app, and then launching it and finding out that your critical add-on doesn't work. Browser extensions, same kind of thing. Make sure that they're compatible. Another thing to know about Mountain Lion is that it is the first operating system to require that all kernel extensions be 64-bit. It will not run 32-bit kernel extensions. So if you have any of those floating around, they are not going to work in Mountain Lion. You're going to need to make sure that those get upgraded. And then I like to clearing out the cruft. When you've been using your machine for a year, you tend to build up a lot of stuff, a lot of applications, a lot of extraneous things that maybe you installed, you played around with, but you're really not using anymore. That game that you thought was hot at the beginning of the year, you played for 3 months and then haven't touched since. Now's a good time to do a little spring cleaning. Clear that stuff off. Take inventory. If you have old files that you've just kind of left on your internal hard drive, stuff that you could archive off, get off of there, put in other locations, back up to the cloud. You know, make multiple copies if it's something that you want to archive. We talk about this all the time. But get that off now before you do the upgrade. You want to have a clean system when you're up and running with a new operating system, or at least that's how I feel. Some people just think, well, I'm just going to, you know, go for it and let the cards fall where they may. And if that's you, that's fine. That's a perfectly fine thing to do. I'm just giving you what sort of my recommendations and the things that I do are, because many of you have asked about that. So clear off all the cruft and then just do a little general cleanup maintenance. I run Disk Utility. I run repair permissions. I go in and I clean out my system and user level caches. The software that I use for that is Cocktail. You can also use Onyx, which is free. Cocktail you have to pay for. I like the user interface in Cocktail, so I'll have links to both of those in the show notes at maccast.com. And then once that's all cleaned off, then backup. Backup, backup, backup. I can't stress this enough. I would never start a major OS upgrade without at least 2 full backups of my current system, and I actually do 3, and even more than that, because I also have critical files archived to other locations. I have stuff stored up in the cloud. I have a full cloud backup that I do through CrashPlan. So I know that even if I completely screwed up my upgrade, I did something wrong, like the power went out right in the middle of my upgrade and it completely wiped out my whole entire drive, I'm going to be able to recover from that. I'm not going to have to worry. Yeah, it might be a hassle, but I'll be able to get back up and running. So I really recommend that you do at least 1 bootable cloned backup. So get a hard drive that's an external hard drive. It can be just USB 2. Doesn't have to be expensive. Doesn't have to be fast. But get one that is the same size as your internal hard drive, and then use a program like SuperDuper or Carbon Copy Cloner that can just take everything that's on your internal drive and clone it to the external drive and make that external drive something that you can boot off of. And after you make that backup, make sure that you take the time and attempt to boot from that drive. Make sure that it is actually bootable and that you can access and read the files and data and information that's on there. You want to verify your backups. You don't want to just say, oh, I have the backups, they're going to work, and then find out when there's a problem that, oh, my backup was corrupted. And I've heard too many horror stories about that happening. So take the extra 5 minutes, plug in that drive, boot from it, make sure that it does work. And again, a third backup of your critical files, say the documents folder in your user folder, your iPhoto library, or your Aperture library, back that stuff up and make sure that you have it safe and secure, because that's stuff you do not want to lose. And related to this, I guess, have a plan for recovery should anything go wrong. It's likely not going to go wrong. I don't want to scare people. Everybody I've been talking to, 99.9% of them have had a smooth transition, a smooth upgrade. But if you're in that 0.01%, you're going to have a really bad day. So don't have a bad day. Be prepared, and it's going to all go great for you. It's what happens is Murphy's Law, right? That when you don't prepare, that's when something's going to go wrong. So don't even let that opportunity happen to you. And the other thing is make sure you give yourself some time. I can't tell you how many people I know who kind of just think, oh, it's going to take 30 minutes. I'm just going to slot it in before that really important meeting that I need to take my Mac to. Bad idea, you know? Set aside some time, a couple hours. It's probably not going to take that long, but plan out that you have some time to sit down and work with it, because inevitably you're going to find, oh, I need to migrate over, you know, some of those preference files, and that's a thing that I have to do by hand. It's going to take a little more time, and you know, some of the prep and planning takes quite a bit of time. Doing those backups can take time. So either do all that stuff in advance or plan out the time where you're going to sit down and you're going to do your upgrade. I try to give myself at least half a day, maybe on a weekend, a Saturday or a Sunday, to get all that stuff done. And if you can have a full day, it's going to be even more relaxing. And then you can maybe even, if you're done early, play around with the operating system a little bit and start to get familiar with it. So those are all the things that I would do to prepare. After that, when you're ready to go, well, you got to buy Mountain Lion. And you can only get Mountain Lion through the Mac App Store. It is a download only. The price, as I mentioned, is $19.99. There is no $69 USB version, you know, USB stick that you can go to the Apple Store and purchase, at least that Apple has announced, and there's no indication that they're going to do that this time around. So you're going to have to buy it through the Mac App Store. The download can take a while. It's just shy of 5 gigabytes in terms of size. So make sure that you have a good fast connection available to you before you start the purchase process. You know, you don't want to be on a slow connection and suddenly realize, hey, this is going to take 4 hours for me to download this package. If you have slow internet, consider going to a friend's house, maybe heading to the Apple Store. Apple will let you use their Wi-Fi network to do your download and purchase. Go to a Starbucks, whatever, wherever you can get some good internet connectivity, that's where you're going to want to buy it. If you can't, if you're in a place where you only have a slow connection, consider purchasing it right before you go to bed. You know, leave your Mac on, make the purchase, let it start downloading, and then just when you wake up in the morning, it's probably going to be there and you can do your install. That's part of that planning, you know, giving yourself time. Say, I'm going to install it Saturday morning, Friday night, start the download, make the purchase, and you'll be ready to go. So as I was saying, it's download only. And what happens is after the download goes into the Mac App Store, it's going to go ahead and launch the installer program. It'll launch right into it. And if you're ready to go at that point and you don't want to make a USB stick of your own or have a backup beyond the bootable partition, emergency partition that it's going to create for you during the install, then you can go ahead and just run the installer. But you need to know that once you've run the installer, the actual install files get removed. So if you ever need to reinstall it, you're going to have to go to your recovery partition and re-download all of the files and stuff like that. If you'd like to create an installer, now's the point when you're going to want to quit the installer and go through that procedure, through that process. So to do that, once you've quit the Mountain Lion installer, you need to go find the installer application, which is going to actually be in your applications folder, and it's going to be called Install OS X Mountain Lion. Find that application, and then you're going to want to control click on the application icon or right click on it and choose Show Package Contents. Because what we need to do is we need to get in there and we need to find the actual installer image that we will then pull out and use to create a bootable backup disk on a USB key or on a DVD. So go in there, right click, Show Package Contents, and then you're going to want to find a file called installesd.dmg. So the Install Electronic Software Distribution, I think is what ESD stands for, image file. And you're going to find it in Contents, Shared Support, and then Install ESD.dmg. That'll be in that pack, you know, when you say Show Package Contents, that's the path. So I like to actually, once I've found that file, copy it out, make a backup of it for safekeeping, or better yet, you might want to just make a full backup of the entire OS X Mountain Lion installer. So I just throw mine over onto the Drobo, keep a copy of it, and then I always have it to go back to should something happen to my emergency USB key. And when you copy that over, you might be asked to enter your admin credentials so that you can authenticate, you know, doing the copy. But once you have that file and you know where that file is, then you're going to make your disk, and you'll use Disk Utility to do that. So go into Applications, Utilities, Disk Utility, launch Disk Utility, and if you want to create a DVD, all you have to do is click the Burn button that's in there in the menu bar. Go out and find that install ESD.dmg file, the one you located just a few moments ago, and then select that. It'll prompt you for a disk. Insert a blank 4.7 gigabyte DVD, and then wait for it to burn. And once it's burned and verified, that should be it. You should be able to put that in. It should mount on your Mac, and you should be able to boot from it by rebooting your system and holding down the C key. If you'd rather do it on a solid-state drive, do it on a USB key, which is how I prefer to do it, you're going to need an 8 gigabyte or larger USB stick. And make sure you have one of those handy and available. Launch Disk Utility again. Go into Applications, Utilities, Disk Utility. Insert the USB stick and then select it from the sources, because you need to make sure that it's partitioned and formatted in a certain way. So select it, go to the Partition tab, and then you can give it a name, something like OS X Install. And then you want to select macOS X Extended Journaled for the format. You want to have it create one partition in the partition layout, and then you want to click on Options, and you want to verify that GUID partition table is the partition table that's going to be used. Click OK, and then click Apply, and then you're going to have to confirm that you want to create the single partition, and you want to format it with all the settings that you just set up. And then that will erase and format your USB stick. And then now it's ready to have the Mountain Lion installer installed onto it. So at this point, what you're going to do is you're now going to go to the Restore tab, and then you're going to want to drag and drop that installesd.dmg image into the source box in the Restore tab. And then down in the destination box, drag in the formatted USB drive. So you should see it listed over there in the sources on the left. Grab that disk and then drag that into the destination box. And then click the Restore button. It'll give you a dialog. You want to confirm that, yes, I do want to erase the drive and install the install ESD image onto it, and let it go. It should take about 30 minutes, could be a little faster depending upon your machine, and then let it do its thing. And once it's finished, you should have a bootable USB disk. So to boot from it, all you have to do is plug it into your Mac, hold down the Option key at startup, and that will give you the option to select your boot disk, select your new USB key, and the Mac should boot up and it should begin the Mountain Lion installer. It should start the installer if everything's gone well. The one thing I need to tell you about this procedure is, for me, at the end of it, I got an error message from Disk Utility right at the end of the restore process. It said, could not restore, invalid argument error. I actually ended up doing the disk creation a couple times before I Googled this error and found out that you can safely ignore it. So don't fall into my trap. If you see that error message, just ignore it. Your disk should be fine. Of course, try to boot from it and verify that it's okay, but it should all be there. I did read you could potentially avoid the error by mounting the ESD image before you start doing the restore. So just, you know, double click it, let it expand and mount on your Mac, and then clone from that, and you should be good to go. So that's the procedure if you want to do all of this stuff manually. If you'd rather avoid the hassle of making a backup disk in Disk Utility, guess what? There's an app for that. There's an application called Lion Disk Maker. It's a free application. It's actually a little Apple Script application, and it's donationware. So if you're going to use it, I would highly encourage you to support the developer, because this simplifies the whole entire process. You just use the software. It's going to create step you through the whole process of creating the USB stick. So maybe give them the 40 extra bucks you saved by not, you know, giving that to Apple to buy their USB key. I'll have a link to Lion Disk Maker in the show notes at maccast.com. And even though it's called Lion Disk Maker, he did update it for Mountain Lion, so it will work with Mountain Lion. The other potential alternative, although I don't know if it's been updated yet, is Apple does have its Apple Recovery Disk Assistant tool. This was created for Lion to basically take your recovery partition, your Lion recovery partition, and put that onto a USB key. Now, the difference with that is that it's only the bootable portion of the install. It's not the full installer itself. So what happens if you've made a recovery disk using Recovery Disk Assistant is you'll plug it in, you can boot from it, but it's still going to have to go back out to Apple servers and download the software, the installation software, which again is almost 5 gigs, so that can take some time. So I prefer to do the manual thing, pull out the install ESD.dmg file and create my own sort of full Mountain Lion installer and just have that available to use and take that to other machines to get it all installed so I don't have to redo the download. This can be very helpful too if you have a friend who maybe is in an area where he has not a good internet connection and can't download it. That person will be your friend for life if you create a bootable Lion installer for them or Mountain Lion installer for them and let them use it. So that's how you get the software. That's how you create a bootable disk. Now, at this point, you have kind of two options for doing your upgrade. You can do the straight update install right over top of Lion. If that's what you're planning on doing, the process is pretty simple. The only thing that I typically recommend is that you disconnect any external drives, USB drives, backup drives, your Time Machine drives, when you're running the installer, just to make it a little bit cleaner. Just, you know, if you have a desktop Mac, only have the mouse and keyboard connected. If you have a laptop, don't have anything connected other than the power cable. And then go ahead and just run the installer, step through the options, and then sit back and wait. And when it finishes, your Mac should reboot, and you should be up and running with Mountain Lion. It's really that simple, and that's what I did on my MacBook Air, and it literally just, that was it. You know, less than an hour, I was up and running and playing around with software and stuff like that. And so far, it's seemed like it's rock solid. Again, I haven't had a lot of hours of FaceTime with it, but in talking with other people who've done the installation, it seems to work remarkably well. So I think this one's a pretty safe one. At least that seems to be what first indications are. I know there's some outside edge cases where people have run into little issues, and we'll try and ferret those out. If you've been hit by some of those gotchas, let us know what they are so that we can share that information with someone else who might, you know, be getting ready to do their Mountain Lion upgrade and could befall the same fate, as it were. So that's over the top upgrade. Simple, straightforward. Of course, I don't like doing anything simply and straightforward. I'm the type of person, you've heard me on the show before, I like to do, when a new major operating system upgrade comes out, I like to do a full clean installation, erase my drive, and sort of start from scratch. It's part of my whole house cleaning procedure. It kind of forces me to do that. I did get an email from a listener who pointed out, you know, Apple's really moving away from that. In a lot of the behaviors that they're doing with these operating system updates. Just even going to a yearly release cycle says that they're going to be doing less and less of these big major updates and kind of more incremental minor ones, which is sort of what Mountain Lion feels like. I think even with the naming, you know, Lion to Mountain Lion, Apple's saying, look, this isn't a huge upgrade. There's some nice new features in here, but it's really going to go pretty smoothly. So I think for 98% of the people out there, if you are not having any issues or you haven't had any issues with the prior operating system, so in this case it would be Lion, if you've had really minor or no issues with Lion, you're probably safe to just do the over-the-top install. You can always come back and do a clean install if you do the over-the-top and you're running into issues and you can't really troubleshoot and figure out what's going on. You can always come back to this procedure. I am just a freak and like to do it because I think it gives me a fresh start. And actually, this time around with my Lion installation, I have had a lot of issues with the Lion, so I do want to definitely clean it out. So how do you do a clean install? Well, you need to create a bootable disk, so we already covered that procedure. But once you have that, again, disconnect all your external devices, your backup drives and things like that. Put in your boot disk, boot from it. Again, hold down the Option key, and then you'll be able to select the drive to boot up from. Select the Mountain Lion installer and boot the Mac, right? Boot it up, boot in the Mountain Lion installer. Once the installer loads, you're going to want to choose the Disk Utility option. And at this point, I'm going to say, you have those multiple backups we were talking about earlier, right? Because now's the time you want to make sure that you have them. At least 2 full backups, and you've confirmed that they're good. You can get and read the data off of them. If you have that, then let's plow forward. You'll select your main hard drive from Disk Utility, and then you're going to go to the Erase tab, and you're going to make sure the format is set to Mac OS X Extended Journaled. I would also say, you know, go to the partition tab and make sure that you are, you know, partitioned with a GUID partition so that's bootable. But since this is an upgrade, I'm going to assume you've already done that because your Mac's been booting so far. But if you're really paranoid about it, you can go check that. Main thing is format macOS 10 extended journaled, and then click erase. And that is going to completely erase everything off your hard drive. So now you're at the mercy of your backups. Once that's done, you can quit the disk utility and run the installer. And it's at this point where we've, you know, we're clean installing Lion. We're putting it onto a fresh formatted drive. After it completes, your Mac's going to restart and the setup process is going to begin. It's at this point that if you're going to use the setup assistant to bring all of your data back, you can go ahead and plug in your Time Machine or your clone backup, your Super Duper clone or your Carbon Copy clone, and you're going to use that as the source for bringing your information back. Now, the setup assistant is going to be, that's the screen where it's going to ask you about transferring your information to this Mac, and it's going to give you the options to do it from Time Machine or another disk. It actually gives you a few options, but you're going to want to recover from Time Machine or another disk in the case of a cloned drive. And then you can pick the data that you want to bring back, the user accounts you want to bring back, and then just let it run. Now, to me, that's not doing an extreme clean install, but I think it's good enough. Again, for the 99.9% of you that are going to fall in this category, which is the 2% of people, right, that really need to do a clean install, of that 2%, 99% of that 2% is probably going to get by with just doing the setup assistant and bringing all that stuff back. It's going to restore all of your settings, all of your user account and information, all your old applications, everything back onto your drive, and you'll be good to go. It takes a while, so again, make sure you have time planned out for it. But once it completes, you should be back up and running, and you'll have all your old accounts and information back. And it's the easiest way to go through this procedure. I, again, like to take it one step further. Remember, I'm a freak. I told you that earlier, right? I'm a fanatic about this stuff. I really want a clean slate. So what I do is when the setup assistant comes up, I actually tell it that I'm going to choose the option to do this stuff later. And I go ahead and don't recover anything at that point from my backups. And I'll proceed with the setup procedure, create an admin user account, something that has a different username from my old account, the one that's on my backups, because we're going to bring that back later once we're booted into Mountain Lion. So create the admin account, and then it'll automatically log you into that, and you'll be booted up into Mountain Lion. It's at that point that I'm going to go run the migration assistant, which is pretty much the setup assistant, just a little bit different. I think it has a few more options in terms of customizing the import, but don't hold me to that. The reason I do it that way is I only want to import my user account. I'm not going to bring in any of the settings or the applications from the old install, and I want to make sure I have control over that. They have these little disclosure triangles and things like that, so you can turn on and off specific things within Migration Assistant, stuff that you want to bring back. So before I even do that, though, I go ahead with the clean new Mountain Lion operating system, and I'll run Apple's software update. I don't think there is anything right now for it to do, but just to be thorough about my whole procedure, I'll run Apple's software update, check for any last-minute updates that maybe came out since they release the actual, you know, Gold Master to the App Store. And then I will start installing the individual applications and doing what I call the install and update dance for all of my apps. And I usually begin with Apple's iLife and iWork applications, although these days I'll start with the App Store. You know, go ahead and launch the App Store and download, re-download and install any of the applications that you have purchased there. In your case, iLife and iWork might be something that you purchased on the App Store. I actually bought mine from the retail discs, so I have to install those and then run Apple's updates. And that's what I mean by this update dance. So install from the original discs, get them up to date, up to their very latest versions, and then lather, rinse, repeat. You know, do that for every one of my applications, whether it be applications from Adobe or from Microsoft or any other third parties. And actually, I don't have any Microsoft products on my computer, truth be told. I used to in the past. But, you know, whatever applications that you're going to use, reinstall those, make sure you get the most up-to-date versions on there, and then you should be good to go. If you want to, at that point, then bring over manually any kind of your old preferences and settings, you can do that. I think structure is a little bit different, specifically with things like application support files and Mountain Lion. I haven't had an opportunity to dig into that to double, triple confirm, but I think the sandboxing that's now required changed some things with respect to applications and where they store stuff. So be a little bit careful on that if you're manually migrating stuff over, and make sure everything ends up in the right place. But I just generally reset up all my settings, just launch the application. If it asks for a product key, put that back in, go into the system settings and retweak all the knobs and dials and stuff like that. Get it set back up the way I like it. And at that point, I've got my clean install, and I should be good to go. Post-installation procedures, things that I do after I've finished all this stuff, I do launch all of my critical applications, make sure that they're running, make sure that they're not crashing, everything looks as expected. It's at that point when you might notice, oh, there's that settings, or those settings that I need to bring over. You can go back out and grab those sorts of things. I'll also check all of my settings of my system, you know, things like mail, make sure mail application is running, make sure all of its settings are correct, all the application settings are correct. One thing about mail that I found out about from Dave Hamilton over at Mac Observer is it appears that in some cases, if you use mail rules, for some reason, Mountain Lion seems to, for some users, turn all of those off. So if you had a bunch of mail rules set up, and you relaunch mail, you want to go in and check those and make sure that they're all still checked on. They may be checked off by default, and you may need to re-enable them. So that was an interesting little thing. But that's why you want to go through and check all your settings and make sure everything is working. And then once all of that is done, it's at that point when I'll reset up my backup strategies. So I'll redo my super duper clone. I'll reset up my Time Machine backup, so plug my Time Machine drive in. And I do something crazy. You know, a lot of people want to kind of carry that Time Machine history along. I don't really worry about it too much. I'll just, you know, let Time Machine reformat that drive, kind of set it up as a new Time Machine drive, and that's day one of my Time Machine backups. And I guess part of the reason I'll do that is I keep an extra Lion clone backup around. Remember how I said I make kind of an extra one? So I'll have my two. I'll even have a third sort of extra clone backup. And I keep that one around for a couple weeks or maybe even a month just in case there's some old settings or application support files or something I forgot to migrate over. I run into a problem, I can go back to that. I also like the fact that it's bootable, because if I hit some sort of catastrophic snag and I need to rewind to a week ago when I was on Lion, I can just plug that drive in, boot from it, and at least get some work done. Get myself through my day and then come back to, okay, let's troubleshoot what happened with Mountain Lion. Why am I having this issue? So you got that. It's also great just for having an old system that you can reference to make sure that, did I bring over all my apps or did I forget an app? Oh, yeah, I can mount that drive, go into the applications folder and compare my old one to my new one and see, what did I miss? What did I forget to reinstall? So it's good as a reference point as well. So I would keep an extra clone backup around if you can. You know, drives are relatively cheap now, under $100. I think you can get a terabyte drive, so that should be good for most cases. Sounds expensive, but for the time you save generally in these whole procedures and for the peace of mind, in my mind, it's worth the little extra cost. So try and slip in, you know, getting a couple of USB drives for doing this kind of stuff throughout the year, and then you'll be prepared when the OS update comes, you'll have those things around and you can just pull them out of the closet and use them. So that's pretty much the whole procedure that I go through for upgrading and installing a new operating system. It changes and tweaks from OS to OS, but the overall structure is pretty much the same. So you may have heard all of that stuff before if you've been listening to the MacCast for a while. And if you know, you do something different that you find particularly helpful or useful, shoot me an email, maccast@gmail.com. And if it's a good tip, we'll share it with the community. We'll share it on the next episode. So what's new in Mountain Lion? You know, what's in there that's going to be a significance? What do you want to go in and check out? Well, there's a ton of new stuff. I'm going to hit some of the key things that I've read about or discovered. One interesting one is there's some Finder enhancements specifically related to the scroll bars. You wouldn't think it would be that big of a deal, but I think some of them are pretty nice little additions. So if you use a mouse, like I use a Magic Mouse, you know, Apple in Lion added those kind of hidden scroll bars, and of course you can go into the system preferences and you can turn them on by default, or turn them back on. By default, they're actually hidden, so you don't see a scroll bar until you actually touch the mouse or start moving stuff around. Well, if you have a trackpad, you're generally not resting your finger on the trackpad, so you can't kind of just lazily move it back and forth and bring up those bars. You're actually going to have to do something on the trackpad. Well, Apple added the ability now in Mountain Lion, if you just place two fingers on the trackpad, don't move them around, just place two fingers on the trackpad, it'll actually bring up those scroll bars. And that can be helpful because the scroll bars scale to show you, you know, how long your document window is. If the smaller the little button, the longer you know you have to go, you know, down in the document, or you can scroll down in the document. And that can be useful information when you're just browsing around. Also, as you're scrolling, you get a wider version of the scroll bar, meaning that little handle that you need to grab isn't that narrow, tiny thing. And, you know, in Lion, how frustrating was it that you had to kind of, it was hidden, so you had to kind of start scrolling it, and then you had to get over to the edge and grab that little tiny point. Yeah, that's not going to be as much of a problem in Mountain Lion because they've actually made it sort of scale up and get wider so you have a bigger handle to grab onto. So that's a nice little tweak, and I think maybe the engineers were frustrated by that as well. Another thing I discovered is a feature that was lost in Lion in the icon view, the ability to scale the icons up and down using the little slider that was at the bottom of the window. That went away. It's now back. So if you are in icon view in the Finder and you go up to the view menu and choose show status bar, make sure that that is on. I think it might be on by default, but down in the status bar, you will see the little slider is back and you can move that back and forth and quickly scale up or scale down your icons without having to go into the, you know, the view settings. And then Launchpad, I know this isn't directly related to Finder, but, you know, the new Launchpad feature that gives you the iOS-style grid of icons that you can launch applications from, they've added a search field to that. So now when you enable a Launchpad, it puts you right into the search field. So you can do the Spotlight-style, you know, searching, filter down, and find the application you're looking for. But not only that, if you just hit Enter, it's going to go ahead and launch that application. So you can enable, find your application, and launch your application all from the keyboard without having to use your mouse using Launchpad now. So very much like Spotlight launching of applications. And I don't know yet which one I'm going to use. I've been using the Spotlight, you know, launch your application trick for so long that I think I'll probably just continue to use that one. But some people might like using the Launchpad for that. I think it won't come as any big surprise that Mountain Lion brings a lot of iCloud into it. iCloud is integrated in the system preferences. It's integrated throughout the operating system, and a lot of Apple's applications, a lot of third-party applications are probably going to be integrating a lot of iCloud. And one of the biggest areas of integration I think you're going to see being adopted is iCloud documents. So now when you open up a file, open dialog, it has a whole different look. It now has this document viewer. So the first thing you need to do is you need to make sure you have an iCloud account and that you've enabled it. So go into System Preferences, go into iCloud. You can sign up for an iCloud account if you don't have one. It's free. You get 5 gigs of storage space. If you already have one, put in your iCloud credentials and you'll be all set up with iCloud under Mountain Lion. And then when you go into an application that supports this new iCloud Documents feature, and right now that's most of Apple's applications. So iWork, TextEdit, those applications, Preview, I think, all have this built in. So you go to File, Open, and you'll get this document viewer, and it opens right up into the iCloud view. I believe iCloud is loaded by default, and then there's another tab that says on my Mac, and that's the more traditional file browsing. It's the stuff that's stored locally on your system. But within the iCloud document viewer, you'll have a new document button for creating a new document within that application. It's down there at the bottom of the window, and that'll create a new iCloud file for that app. So you can create that, and then it'll throw you into the application, and you can start just working on it. And then when you save, it's going to actually be saving that file into the cloud. I think actually technically it saves it local and then syncs it up to the cloud. And similarly, you're going to see all of your documents there that are already stored in iCloud, and you can select them and start working with them directly on iCloud. Again, I think it's technically not quote-unquote directly, but it feels that way. I mean, when you're saving, you'll see it showing up in the iCloud documents. And the other nice thing is that it supports all of those built-in OS features like autosave and versions and stuff like that. All of that works with the iCloud storage in the same way that it would work with the iOS standard on my Mac storage. So you don't need to worry about any of that. It's just going to do its thing. It's going to be just like having local files. It's just they now are synced up through iCloud. If you want to add or remove files from the iCloud storage within an application, all you have to do is drag them in or out of that window and that little document viewer, and that will move them in or out. It actually moves them just like you were moving them in and out of folders in the Finder. If you want to copy them, same Finder trick that you would use for copying a file, hold down the Option key. When you drag it, you'll get that little green plus symbol, and then when you drop it, it'll actually make a copy of that. So if you want to copy it from on my Mac and throw a copy up into iCloud, you can certainly do that, and it's pretty easy to do. You can also move files between document viewers with different applications. So the document viewer becomes a very app-centric view of your documents. So stuff that you've put into Pages kind of lives in Pages document viewer. And when you come back to view your iCloud documents for Pages, you're only going to see the stuff that is there for Pages. You're not going to see the stuff that you threw in TextEdit and vice versa. So if you want to get a file from one document viewer to another, say from TextEdit to Pages, you can just grab, say, an RTF file that's in iCloud there and literally drag it over to the document viewer in Pages, and it will copy that file over for you, or move that file over for you, as it were. So that's pretty easy to do. It's a little bit different dynamic, which is why I pointed out you kind of have to open up the application, go to File, Open, open up the other application, go to File, Open to get your quote-unquote folders open, your iCloud folders, and then drag the documents between the two locations. And if you want to move an iCloud file from iCloud to your Mac, again, you could just simply drag it out and onto your Mac and put it there. Another way that you can do it, you can actually click when you're working in a document, when you're working inside an iCloud document and you don't have the document viewer up in front of you, if you want to move it to your Mac or vice versa, you can click on the title bar and you'll notice that there is a move to option under the where dropdown, and you can choose the location that you want to move it to. So move it to on my Mac, or you could choose other to select a specific location where you want to move it to, and you can do all that right from the document that you're currently working in. Another nice little trick that you can do from the title bar and clicking on that area is you can actually rename a file while you're working in the file without going into the Finder. You just click that little the title in the title bar there, and you'll notice there's a rename option. If you select that, it'll make the title actually editable, and you can rename it, hit enter, and it'll actually rename that document in the Finder as well. So I've always had trouble in the Finder, you know, clicking on a file and then getting my insertion point to rename it. It's always frustrating. This works much easier, and I don't have to leave the application I'm working in, so I kind of like that. I do know the trick in the Finder, though, about, you know, if you just select the file once and then hit the return or enter key, it'll make that text, the file name, editable. So that's a good little trick too if you have trouble like I do sort of selecting it with the mouse in the Finder. The other big running theme in Mountain Lion is this idea that a lot of the applications and concepts that are in iOS have kind of made their way into the desktop. And specifically, what you're going to notice is in Mountain Lion, you have iOS converts, I'm calling them. You have Notes is now its own application called Notes in OS X. Reminders from iOS is now Reminders in OS X. So there's consistency. You also have Game Center and Messages, which is really nice because if you're moving between platforms and you're syncing stuff back and forth, now the same applications that you're going to see on your iOS devices are going to match up to the same applications that you're going to see in OS X. Notes is, as I said, moved outside of Mail. It used to live inside Mail, which never really made any sense, but it still has Mail roots, which might cause a little bit of confusion. This actually came up in my user group. Someone was saying, you know, I can sync everything, my calendars and my contacts and stuff like that, but when I went to try and set up syncing of Notes, it told me I had to have a at Mac or an at me account. You know, my account that's tied into iTunes and iCloud, everything I have set up for my syncing is actually not a mobile me account. It's another email account, which you can do. And it turns out the problem is that with Notes, Notes is not using the iCloud syncing yet. It's still using the IMAP server to actually sync the notes back and forth. So it still kind of has the underpinnings of the mail roots. I'm sure Apple's going to change that at some point, but you need to have it set up through your mail server, and you need to have an IMAP server for the syncing to work. So if you're on a POP server, you're going to need to get some sort of IMAP account to have that work. And, you know, iCloud and Mobile Me, your iCloud account is obviously going to work. So if you're using that, you'll have no problems. And Notes will sync back and forth. You can also create folders in Notes, and you can drag notes between them, which is kind of nice. Reminders, very similar. It was Reminders used to be to-dos in iCal, in the calendar app. Now those have been moved out. They've been put into their own application. It works very much like the iOS application. You can have iCloud reminders that sync. You can also have On My Mac reminders that just stay local if you want to have ones that are just tied specifically to your Mac. You can set due dates on your reminders and be reminded of those. You can also do the whole geofencing thing. So that's where if you want to have a reminder that only pops up when you're at your office or only pops up when you're at home or specific locations, you can set those geofences and have those reminders come up. And then, of course, you can also set priority of reminders. But it's a nice, simple reminders list, and it's built right into the operating system. Game Center also made its way to OS X Mountain Lion. It lets you log in. You can see all the game stats for iOS and Mac. It's got both of them in there now. You can see your friends list. You can invite friends. You can respond to friends' requests. And when I launched mine, I didn't have any OS X games yet that were integrated with Game Center, but I'm sure developers are going to be doing that. And I'm hoping that I believe that there's a way for iOS games and macOS X games to kind of share, and maybe you can even do the whole invite to a game. There's some new features coming in iOS 6 that I think are going to really leverage this along with the Game Center that's in Mountain Lion. So it's got potential. There's not a lot there right now, and that's just something to be aware of. Messages, you may have been already using the Messages beta, so you might know what this is all about. Messages is actually integrating all the different messaging systems that we've had in OS X for so long. So things like iChat, FaceTime, iMessages are now all coming under the Messages application. They're all integrated. There's kind of a single window, which can be a little bit confusing because Messages also supports other protocols like AIM and Jabber and Google Talk and Yahoo. Your buddy list is actually in a little separate window, so you'll need to go under the window menu and choose buddy list to actually see it. By default, what happens is you just have the main window, and if you need to send a new message, you just click the little plus symbol to add a new message thread, and it keeps a history of all those, and you can pull in from any account, so you just start typing the name of the user, the username, and you'll see it'll list the service. It actually does a pretty nice job, and you can pull out of contacts, you can send, to a phone SMS from messages because it has iMessage, and that works back and forth. The one thing you need to know about that is if you initiate a conversation, say using a phone number, so sending a text, it's going to stay in that sort of phone number attached mode, even if that person has that number tied to an iMessage account with an email. You need to initiate the conversation with email if you want to stay with iMessages using the email address. I don't know why the two aren't linked together on the desktop yet. I thought I had read somewhere that they were, and maybe I've missed a setting. If I missed something, let me know, but I, for the life of me, couldn't figure out how to attach a phone number and an email so that if someone sent me an iMessage to my email, it would show up in the same place that they send me an iMessage to my phone number at. I end up with two kind of conversation threads going on, and they don't seem to link or sync up. And the other thing is that video messaging for the different services is integrated into this, and FaceTime is quasi-integrated. It's still kind of a separate application, but there is, if you hit somebody who has FaceTime in the Messages app and you click on the little video icon, it'll launch then FaceTime from there, and you can do your FaceTime call with that person. So that's a little bit about Messages. Notification Center is another thing that came over from iOS and is now in Mountain Lion. And this is probably one of the most visible things you'll see when you reboot into Mountain Lion. Everything looks almost identical to what it looked like in Lion. The dock is changed. There's a new style dock. It looks more like a shelf. It's kind of the 3D look is more solid, I guess. That's a good way to put that. You'll notice that right away. And then you'll notice this little three-line icon up where the spotlight icon used to be. So the spotlight is kind of pushed over to the left a little bit, and you've got this little three-line icon, and clicking on that reveals the notification center. It kind of slides out from the right side of the screen. So you can click the icon. You can also do a two-finger swipe on your trackpad from the far right. So starting on the far right, moving to the left, you swipe in with two fingers, and the trackpad or the message center or notification center will slide out on the right there. And it was a little bit tricky for me to get this gesture at first. The trick is make sure you start with your two fingers actually all the way off of the trackpad and kind of slide them on, and it'll work consistently every time to bring out Notification Center. You can set up the preferences in System Preferences, Notifications, control all the different settings and alerts. You have badges, you have alerts, you have sounds, again, just like we do in iOS. And you can control which applications will actually give you notifications, which notifications they give you, how all of that stuff is handled, how many appear in the notification center. So you have a lot of finite control over how you're getting notified. And the notifications, if you're using banners, kind of come up growl style. If you're familiar with growl, these little boxes that sort of pop in the upper right and then fade away after a few seconds, or fade away when you actually click over and dismiss them. But depending upon your settings, the notifications will kind of build up in a big long list. You'll notice there's a little X button at the top of each group. You can click that to actually clear the current notifications that are in that group. That works for everything, as near as I can tell, except calendar notifications. Calendar notifications apparently cannot be cleared. They're just there at the top of the window. I think you can control the order also in the notification center. You can go and slide those things around. If you scroll down in Notification Center, there's actually the ability to turn on a Do Not Disturb feature, but you can't see it until you actually scroll down in the window, and there's no indication that there's additional controls up there, but there are, and there's actually a lot of things in OS X Mountain Lion that are like this, where you kind of have to scroll one direction and, oh, hey, there's some new options. I don't know how I feel about that from my UI perspective. There's no visual hints to let you know that that stuff's there. So I think it's not very user-friendly, and I'm kind of surprised at Apple for taking this tact. But we've seen it kind of crop up in iOS, you know, the whole pull down to refresh. But even then, with those applications, they usually have a little text, at least at the first time you see it, to indicate, hey, here's what you need to do and here's how this works. I just kind of discovered this Do Not Disturb option by accident. You scroll down and you can turn the Do Not Disturb on. And what happens is it turns off your badges and alerts in Notification Center for up to 24 hours or until you actually turn it back on. So it's cool because notifications will still come in. They'll appear in Notification Center, but none of your badges will pop up. So if you need to be heads down, you don't want to be distracted by that stuff, you can quickly turn that on or turn it off. And another cool tip or trick, if you want to access this even quicker, is if you hold down the Option key, when you click on that icon, it will actually turn the notifications on or off just in a single click. And you can tell that because the icon will be grayed out when notifications are disabled or on that Do Not Disturb mode. And then if you look way down at the bottom right-hand corner of the window, there is a little button for quickly accessing the settings, the system preferences for notifications. And just a interesting little fact about that is because that thing is there, you now cannot expand your dock to be the full entire width of the bottom of your window. It has to leave a little bit of space on the left and on the right to allow for that little icon to exist when you open up the notifications view. So, interesting little thing. I think I saw that in John Siracusa's extensive article on Mountain Lion, his Mountain Lion review, which is just awesome. So you should check that out if you haven't read that, if you want to know everything that's in Mountain Lion. I'm just covering kind of the major bits and stuff that I've run into. Security is another thing that Apple's trying to step up in Mountain Lion and the operating system in general. We already talked a little bit about the sandboxing thing. A big part of the security, specifically related to applications and apps that you buy from the App Store or any or even from a third-party developer that you download directly from their website, is this thing called Gatekeeper. And Gatekeeper basically prevents you from running by default any application that isn't sold through the Mac App Store and isn't signed by a developer. It isn't something that it has an ID attached to it. So developers have had the ability since Apple announced this feature to sign up, get an Apple ID, and sign their applications. And so that when you download the app and you run it, Gatekeeper is going to recognize and say, oh, I know that developer. They're registered with Apple. You've said it's okay for me to go ahead and run that software. I'm going to go ahead and run it. And you can adjust this setting in the System Preferences, Security, and Privacy tab. As I mentioned, by default, it will let you run without any warnings any application that is signed by a developer, has a developer ID attached to it, or applications that are downloaded from the Mac App Store, because those are vetted by Apple and they verify that they've got the, well, they have to have the IDs for one, and then they also have the additional layer of it was actually looked at by somebody before it ended up in the Mac App Store. Not 100% security, but more secure than just, you know, downloading something off of somebody's website. So the options are Mac App Store only, so you can make it more restrictive. Apple has kind of the middle one, which is Mac App Store and identified developers. That's the default. And then the third option is anywhere. You know, go ahead and let me run any application. Doesn't matter where it comes from. I'm going to go ahead and run it. And if you leave the settings as they are at default, an unsigned app in Mountain Lion will then give you a warning. So if you buy an application from a developer who hasn't signed it, download it from their website, the first time you try and run it, it's actually going to block the software and not let it run. And this is a, you know, software is only stopped until the first time you allow it to actually run. And so if you actually knew, you know what, this developer just didn't update their application yet, they haven't signed it, I know it's safe, I want to run it, you have a couple options. You could go in and you could change the default setting over to anywhere, and then launch the application, and once that application has been allowed to launch, then you could set your settings back to the more restrictive setting, and that app will continue to launch and continue to work. But there's actually a quicker way to get around these one-time exception cases where you don't have to change the settings in the system preferences. If you hold down the control key, click on the application, and choose open, it will pop up a dialog. It'll warn you, hey, this isn't signed. What do you want to do? There's an open button right in that dialog. You can click the open button. And for that one application, for that one instance, it'll actually let you launch it and bypass the gatekeeper restriction. So that's a good little trick to know, because you're probably going to encounter an application that maybe an app developer hasn't signed yet with their Apple ID. And if you do find that, it might be worth a just nice, polite email to the developer saying, hey, I noticed that your application isn't signed. Apple's doing this new thing. It would make it a little bit easier for me as a customer if the application was signed. And, again, be very polite. But I think most developers have already adopted this model and are already signing their applications. And then, obviously, the reason that this is happening, or maybe not obviously, I'm just pointing out the reason Apple is doing this gatekeeper thing is because this would prevent if you had a malicious piece of software that came through an email, basically Trojans, came through an email, or you clicked a link on a website and it auto-downloaded something and it auto-launched it. It's very likely not going to be signed. I guess there's nothing to prevent a developer from, you know, creating a piece of malware and actually getting an Apple ID and signing his application. But it's far less likely because they've got to get vetted through Apple's process, and Apple knows about them now. And they're going to be able to see, oh, you signed that piece of malware. You know, we can go after you. We got your information, or we at least know something about you. So it's going to protect you a little bit more because it'll block and stop any application that's not signed. So something that just auto-downloaded and started running in the background is going to have a gatekeeper. You know, it's going to have that restriction and not be allowed to run, and that's why it keeps you a little bit safer than you were before. Another big thing that you're going to notice right away in Mountain Lion, because the button is everywhere, is the sharing button. That's the little thing that looks like a box with the arrow kind of pointing out of it, and allows you to share documents and files and things with different services, be it Apple's internal services, emails, or social media services, things like Twitter. And there's big-time Twitter integration in Mountain Lion. If you have a Twitter account, you can actually go into System Preferences. You go into Mail, Contacts, and Calendars, which now, because of all this sharing stuff that's in there, that's not an email and not a contact and not a calendar, it seems like Apple might need to relabel that at some point. But you go into Mail, Contacts, and Calendars, and that's where you add all of your accounts for different services. You click the little plus icon, and you'll notice you have an option for the Twitter service. You select Twitter, enter your account information, your username and password, authorize it. And then once you've done that, you'll notice in the window, you have an option to import into contacts the Twitter handles. There's a little update contacts button. If you click on that and then give it permission to access your address book, the emails and phone numbers in your address book, it'll take those and use them to try and find matching contacts in Twitter and update those records in your address book. So I actually let it do it, and it did a surprisingly nice job of, you know, getting a bunch of Twitter handles for contacts that I had in my address book that I didn't have there before. So you might consider using that. Again, you have to allow it to access to the emails and phone numbers in your address book. So if you're not comfortable with that, or in the Contacts app, I guess I should say, because as I was mentioning earlier, Apple's going for consistency with their application. So in Mountain Lion, address book is now called Contacts, which is the same thing that it's called in iOS. That consistency, I think, long-term is going to be a very good thing. So you can import those Twitter handles into your address book, and then you'll have them available to use throughout the operating system. Of course, there's other services that you'll notice in there. Flickr, Vimeo, AOL are all in there. One that I've been getting a lot of questions about is Facebook. Facebook is coming. Apple announced it, which I think added to some of the confusion. I went in there day one and was like, where's Facebook? I can't find it. And then I remembered, oh yeah, Apple said we're going to have it, but it's not coming out until the fall. My guess is that they're going to launch it alongside the iOS 6 update in that September-October timeframe. So you're going to have to wait a little bit longer for the sharing features to show up with the Facebook. But, you know, you'll find that little button everywhere. It's even in, like, Quick Look. So if you're quick looking a document, you have the little share button. You could send it to Twitter if it's an image. You could send it up to Flickr, all these different places right from the Finder, just about wherever you are within any application. So play around with that. They do change the options in the services dependent upon where you're looking. So you know, if you're in iMovie, they're going to give you the options for sharing to Vimeo, for example, versus sharing to some other service that doesn't handle video. They're not going to show you a service that's not going to deal with video. So pretty smart about how they're doing that sort of stuff. So that's social integration. A big feature, this is probably my favorite feature that's in Mountain Lion, because I've been playing around with it, and it's surprising how well it works, and that is dictation. It's not a full Siri implementation, but it's the dictation part of Siri is now available in the operating system. You have to enable it. I don't believe it's enabled by default. So you go into System Preferences, and you'll notice there's now a Dictation and Speech preference pane. Click on that, and then just turn on the radio button that says Dictation. And then once it's turned on, you'll notice there's some settings there. By default, the activation key for doing dictation is tapping the FN, the function key, twice, but you can change it from here with the little drop-down menu. And then once it's enabled, any application throughout the operating system that has the ability to accept text input, so any place you can type text, you can now double tap the function key, and right there, a little microphone icon bubble will kind of appear. It'll give you the little purple levels bar, and you can literally just start talking, and when you're done, it will send your audio out to the Nuance servers or Apple servers using the Nuance technology and convert your speech into text. And what amazed me was how fast it worked and how really accurate it was in terms of getting my speech correct and not making mistakes. It was really cool. The one caveat about this that I do have to point out is that you do need a live internet connection for this to work, and your information, your audio, is going out to servers over the internet. So if you're not comfortable with that, if that's a security thing for you, then you want to be aware of that. Another interesting new feature is something called PowerNap. And Apple actually released a SMC System Management Controller update to enable this feature on the 2011 and 2012 MacBook Airs. It's also available on the Retina MacBook Pro. There was an SMC update for those models as well. And so it's only currently supported on those models of Macs. But what it does, if your Mac supports it, is it allows, when your Mac is asleep, for it to still perform some actions. So it's not completely asleep. It kind of is waking up periodically and actually performing some various tasks, but in a very low power mode. So it's enabled through the Energy Saver System Preferences. And from what I've read, what supposedly happens is your Mac wakes up about every hour or so in kind of this darkened, the screen doesn't come on, low power state, even when the lid is closed on a notebook. And it'll do this as long as there's at least 30% battery or if the MacBook is plugged in. And if those things are correct, then it will do things like still check your email and sync your contacts with iCloud and update your calendars and sync your reminders and sync your notes and sync documents in the cloud and provide any photo stream updates. So this is cool if your machine is asleep and you're out and about and you're working on an iWork document, for example. Say you do something with a Pages document. You save that into iCloud. It's going to actually be downloaded and synced up on your Mac when you get home. If your Mac supports this PowerNap feature, you can have your Mac be asleep and it'll still get those updates. So those updates, syncing contacts and calendars, checking mail and stuff like that, those will still happen even if you are running on battery power, as long as that battery is above 30%. There is a couple PowerNap actions or features that will only kick in if you're plugged into power. And specifically, it's Time Machine backups and downloading software updates. Those two things to work in PowerNap, you need to be plugged into power. and those can happen automatically. So that'll be nice if you have a big, you know, software update that is going on. You've put your Mac to sleep overnight, and then when you wake it up in the morning, that update will already be downloaded and ready for you to install. So that's PowerNap, not available on every Mac, but I have a feeling moving forward, all Macs are going to support the feature. AirPlay mirroring is something that a lot of people are very excited about. This allows you to mirror your desktop from your Mac to an Apple TV, either an Apple TV 2 or an Apple TV 3. This is going to be great for videos, for presentations. It's really great if you have content that maybe is only viewable on your Mac or viewable in your browser, either through some specific application, and you want to be able to share that. Flash video is a great example of this. You know, there's no Flash on the Apple TV, but you can now bring up a Flash video on your Mac in a web browser and then turn on AirPlay mirroring and have that full screen on your big screen TV. So a lot of people are going to really like this new feature. AirPlay devices also show up as audio output sources for the audio for the sound settings on your Mac. So something you've been able to do with AirPlay audio is send audio from a specific application, say like iTunes, to a set of AirPlay speakers. But what you couldn't do is send it from a third-party application that didn't support AirPlay, or you couldn't send it from, say, send your system audio over there. You can now actually do that because AirPlay devices just show up as another output source. It's just like you plugged in a set of external speakers or something like that. They show up there, and you can send the audio out to those. So that's a nice little new addition, and a lot of people didn't know about that because most of the focus has been on the video features that are built into AirPlay mirroring, but it also does support audio. Safari 6, that came out for Lion as well as Mountain Lion. So some of these features you're going to be able to access without having to upgrade. iCloud tabs, which I believe are only available in Mountain Lion. I don't think I saw them in Lion Safari 6. But this is a cool new feature. It allows you to open up and see tabs that are open in other Safari browsers that are on different Macs or different iOS devices that all share the same iCloud account. So it sounds a little strange, but what you get is you get this little cloud icon in your toolbar. When you click on it, it gives you just a text list of the different machines that you have, either iOS devices or Macs, and then any tabs that are currently open on that machine in Safari. And you can select one of those, and then it will open up on the local Mac in Safari on the Mac that you're working with. And that's really cool. I've used the feature a couple times now, and it's kind of handy because you might be browsing something, say, on your iPhone, and maybe that was earlier in the day, and now you're back, you're sitting at your Mac, and you're like, oh, yeah, I wanted to check out that thing. I can't remember the site. Now you can just click on the iCloud tabs and boom, right there, you have that tab available to you and you can just pull it into where you're at. So this is this whole concept of kind of syncing and just your life following you around, your iLife following you around and having access to all of your stuff. And we're going to be seeing, I think, more and more of this sort of seamless transition from iOS to desktop and back and forth. And I think that's really, if I were to say the one focus of Mountain Lion in terms of the update, it is moving us toward this sort of, doesn't matter what device I have, my data, my information, the stuff I want to access is just going to be there and ready for me to get at. I think Apple's done a pretty good job of making that experience seamless, and this is a really good example of that. Another thing that's nice in Safari 6 on Mountain Lion is you get these expose-style tab views. There's a little icon in the menu bar. It looks like the cover flow icon, I think it's up off to the right-hand side. And when you click that, all of your tabs kind of come down to the main window, and you can swipe between them left or right, get nice full previews and see what is in that tab. You can click on it, bring that to the foreground, and start working with it. So it's a little more visual way to navigate between your tabs, which if you open up a lot of tabs, it can get a little bit confusing as to what site was that? So this gives you a good visual way to browse through those things. And then probably the biggest change that if you've downloaded, and this one is in the Lion version as well as the Mountain Lion version, if you've downloaded Safari 6, is the unified address bar, meaning that the little Google search box is gone and the search box is integrated with the URL bar. So you can either type a search in there or you can specifically type in a URL and it'll handle it either way. It does a nice little job of dropping down suggested results both from the Google search as well as prior websites that you've maybe visited in terms of auto-filling the addresses. So I'm a little bit out personally on how I feel about this feature. It throws me off a little bit. It's taken me a little while to get used to, but I think now about a week or so in, I finally converted. I think this was going to be one of those ones that feels a lot like natural scrolling where you want to rebel against it the very first time you're messing around with it, and then it kind of grows on you, and then eventually you're going to be in the position where I can't do it any other way. This is how it has to be. And Apple's kind of late to this party. A lot of other browsers, I think Chrome and Firefox, have adopted this sort of universal box concept and run with it. So Apple's now doing the same thing. Mail application, there's a couple cool little updates in Mail. One of them is that if you're going through your mail messages and you kind of have that long list and you scroll down to the bottom, you've had a lot of messages that you're going through and you want to jump back up to the top of your mail list, you can click the title bar area where it says sort by date. And this is another one of those features that's kind of like iOS, you know, where you tap the title bar and it auto-scrolls you back up to the top. It'll do that in Mail now, which is a nice new little tweak and addition, and one that I think a lot of people have missed. The other one that is quite a bit more visible and I think really handy is something called Mail VIPs. And really what this is almost just like this special little mailbox, or really a special little flag that then applies a filter to messages from specific contacts that you've designated as your quote-unquote VIPs. And it just basically, regardless of which mailbox they're in or where the mail came into, it separates them out and puts them, there's a little star VIP folder that shows up right by your flagged folder, and it throws their messages, any messages from that person based on their contact record, throws them into the VIP section. So you can kind of segregate out their messages and make sure you pay attention to those first. And the way you add a VIP is there's a little star icon to the left of their name when you're reading their email. You can just click on that, and that will add them to your VIP list. You can also click on their address in the header bar and choose the Add to VIPs option, and then just do the opposite if you want to remove a VIP. So this is going to be really handy, you know, for like making sure you don't miss emails from your wife or your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever it might be. Anybody important in your life, you want to make sure that you don't miss their emails, you're probably going to want to add them to this VIP list. And I think it's going to be very handy. And I'm assuming it's going to carry over and be added in iOS 6. If that wasn't already announced, I don't specifically remember if it was or not. So nice little, a couple of nice little additions in Mail. And then want to talk about one thing that was removed, and I'm probably bringing this one up because it directly affects me, because being a web developer, I have a development environment set up on my Mac, and I like to use the Apache web server that's built into Mac OS X, and I enable and disable that from the sharing system preference pane. So you go into sharing, and there was always web sharing. Well, that is now gone in Mountain Lion. Apple has chosen to remove that. It's no longer an option. All of your settings are still there. So luckily, if you did the over-the-top upgrade and you had already set up Apache and all that stuff, all of those things are maintained, but you just don't have the GUI anymore for turning on or off the web server. You have to go in and use the command line. If you're not really comfortable with that, Apple says, you know, you can buy the $20 upgrade, the $19.99 upgrade to OS X Mountain Lion server 10.8. Incidentally, someone told me that if you were running Lion server before and you purchased Mountain Lion client and did the upgrade, the server application for Lion will actually get disabled. It gets grayed out, and there's that little don't sign, you know, symbol that goes over the top of it. And I'm assuming that's because you also need to upgrade your server to mount from Lion server to Mountain Lion server. Only $20, so not real expensive. Worth it if you're going to use some or all of the server features. If you'd prefer not to run the full server, and maybe you just want a GUI tool for Apache, you don't want to have to use the command line tools, Tyler Hall has a blog. He actually is a software developer for a piece of software called Virtual Host X that lets you manage Apache virtual hosts and stuff like that from a GUI. He segregated out a web sharing preference pane, and you can download it for free on his website. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. So it can serve as a replacement for the web server options or the web sharing in the system preferences. Basically, the stuff that Apple took away, you can kind of get back with this tool. It just ends up being another system preference pane. And like I said, if you want more than that, because it just does that one thing, if you'd rather have the ability to control more of the Apache settings, specifically the virtual host stuff, take a look at his Virtual Host X application. It looks really nice. I'm considering maybe just buying it and leaving it at that. But, you know, right now I kind of can handle it from the command line. But it's always nice to have these GUI tools in it. I'm sad that Apple took that away. I kind of understand them wanting to direct, you know, server stuff to the server product and client stuff to the client product. But we've always, one of the big benefits in my mind of Mac OS X is we've always had access to these powerful Unix tools, you know, that are at the core of the operating system. And Apple's always given us kind of nice, clean interfaces for at least doing the basic functionality. So to see them kind of pulling back on that and separating it a little bit, it's a little bit sad. But overall, Mountain Lion, as you can tell, lots of new features. I've only just touched a few of them here today, and, you know, we've had a pretty good show, covered a lot of details. Obviously, I have not seen everything, and I'm sure there's a lot more. Some of you are like, hey, you forgot to point out this, you forgot to point out that. If that's running through your mind right now, put it in an email. Send it to me. Or even better yet, put it in an audio comment and send it to me. I'd love to share this stuff. You know, I can't look everywhere. I think the stuff I read blogs and stuff like that. You might read different ones, or you might discover something on your own that's just completely cool, amazing, and awesome. And we want to make sure that information gets out there. So please shoot me an email. Let me know. But I think that's going to do it for this week. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You can check out their software. Get more information and details over at circusponies.com. Smile, they make a text expander, disk label, PDF pen for iPad, and text expander touch. You can check out all their software, get more information and details over at smilesoftware.com. And Gazelle, if you want to get some cash for your old iPhone, your old iPod, maybe an old Mac, and you want to do it without the hassles of auctions or classified sites, check out gazelle.com. You can go to there, do a simple search, and they make it real easy to sell and get cash for your stuff. So check it out, gazelle.com. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MacCast. Big thank you to you for your support. Please keep your emails, your audio comments coming. Your leopard, snow leopard, mountain cat, lion, puma thing questions. Your mountain lion questions. It's been a long show. Your mountain lion questions, send those along, maccast@gmail.com, or call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. You can also leave voicemail on Skype. The Skype address is the MacCast. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about in this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's twitter.com/maccast. And be sure to check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/themaccast. That's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.